friends. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com worldwide. And I'm delighted to welcome Martin Nolan from Kiltoom in County Roscommon, not that far from Athlone. But he, let me tell you what his gig is. He is the founder, executive director, and partner principal of Julian's Auctions, located in Beverly Hills, California, a company that auctions celebrity, sports, film, music, and art memorabilia with amazing record-breaking success. Now, how does a fella, first of all, you're very welcome, Martin.
Delighted to be back on the show, Adrian. You had me on a few times when I started in this career because I was working on Wall Street, and I left Merrill Lynch to join the auction world. And I know that you were intrigued by that because, you know, that was sort of like, it seemed to be like a real big difference in career choice. But as I mentioned before, you know, the auction room brings buyers and sellers together, just like the New York Stock Exchange, buyers and sellers. So it's very simple. In fact, auctions are older than Wall Street.
Wow. Okay. So tell us a bit about growing up in Kiltoom.
Yeah, so like I was a country boy, walking to Ballybane National School and then going into town, which is 3 miles away, getting the bus into secondary school, where, you know, the townies referred to me and anyone that I was from my parish as coaches. We were like rural bums. Even the teachers would refer to us as rural bums. We were 3 miles away. Of course, that has changed now. It's all suburban. Athlone has sort of extended out to Hudson Bay, where I'm from. But a very, I would say, one of seven kids, three brothers, three sisters, three older, three younger. My dad died when I was just 16. My mom was widowed at 47 with seven kids, all in school. In fact, my youngest brother, Frank, hadn't even started school. So all of that, you know, weaves into the making of who you are as a person. Like, everyone has an upbringing, everyone has parents. And, you know, it's part of life lessons growing up, going to school, a school of hard knocks, if you will. Yeah. And then I got a job, after leaving Turner, I got a job in the civil service, working with an agricultural organization on Forest Pilotage, now known as Chagas. And I was there for 5 years. I went to Australia for a year. I was doing accountancy at night. I went to school at the College of Commerce in Rathmines in Dublin at night. And when I got my accounting qualification, I went to Australia for a year on a career break. I also applied for a green card in the lottery program, the Domini Visa program, which came out in 1987. And I won my green card in 1989 after I had returned to Ireland from Australia, which I absolutely loved, by the way. I lived in Sydney for 9 months, and then I traveled all of Australia for 3 months, which was an incredible experience, incredible opportunity.
Yeah, and then when I got a backpacker, was it?
Well, yeah, so I worked as an accountant. I was working with Digital Equipment Corporation and Boral Gas, an Australian company. And then I just went backpacking. I was out the outback, Catherine Gorge. I climbed Ayers Rock, Uluru, as it's known now. I went to Perth and Adelaide and Melbourne and Canberra and Brisbane.
Wow.
I did the entire, and it was incredible. Fantastic country, fantastic people. I still have great friends there, especially among the Irish community that I lived with when I was in Australia. There's a fantastic network there, and they're all doing really well, which is fantastic. But I got the green card for America, and I decided to come to New York. It was only 5 hours away from home. Ireland is still home for me. And I felt, oh, wow, you know, I could work on Thursday, fly to Ireland on Thursday night and be home for breakfast Friday morning, have a weekend at home and back to New York on Sunday or Monday. Something I couldn't ever think about doing when I was in Australia. And that's sort of why I stayed in America and have absolutely no regrets. I've been back to Australia many, many times. I love going back, but America is where I've made my home, and Los Angeles now. But I still have a place in New York. So I get to back and forth to New York quite a lot, probably once a month.
Now, what was your first job in New York?
So I came to New York, and my first day in New York, I went to the Gaelic Park in the Bronx. And
right.
Then the next day, I did the sightseeing in New York, and on the Tuesday, I was passing by the Hilton Hotel on 6th Avenue, and I was in, honestly, shorts and Birkenstock sandals and a t-shirt. I wasn't interviewing, I was just getting application forms, and I went into the personnel department, and I met the, happened to be the head of personnel was there, and I asked for an application, and he said, what position are you applying? I said, I'll do anything, and he said, when can you start? I said, I can start tomorrow. He said, okay, go down to the tailor and get fitted for a bellman's uniform. And I was working the next day as a bellman at the Hilton Hotel, which was incredible. And I remember, like, people saying, oh, where's the water fountain? At the entrance of the Hilton Hotel, there was a big water fountain bubbling up and all that. I thought, that's what they were looking for. But no, they were looking for a drinking fountain. But that was how green I was about, you know. And I learned, I got to meet incredible people. But it was like my university to life in America, because I got to meet all walks of people, from very famous to just regular people attending conventions. And I did it for 2 years. I was a bellman, bell captain, doorman. And then, you know, when I realized, you know, I'm not going back to Australia and I'm going to make New York home, I figured, well, I need to now get serious about my career, which at that time I said, if New York, you're in finance, you're in theater, or you're in fashion. Well, I wasn't in fashion or theater, so finance was my thing. So I decided to train to be a stockbroker, which I did, started January 1992, working at a company on Wall Street, Gruntel & Company, the second oldest firm on the street. And I worked on Wall Street then for 13, 14 years through 9/11, which was like life-changing for many people and for many different reasons, mindset, et cetera. And so, that was great for me, but then I wasn't tremendously fulfilling. I didn't feel rewarded enough. And when I had an opportunity, when I met Darren Julian, who had started Julian's Auctions, he was in New York in 2004 doing an auction for Johnny Cash, who he knew and was friends with. And he was doing that auction with Sotheby's in New York. And that's when I met Darren. And he was a marketing genius, but needed a finance guy, which I was. So I joined Julian's in March of 2005. JulianEntertainment.com was what we were set up as, but then we became known as Julian's Auctions. And we were doing the second estate sale for Marilyn Monroe, which was a huge deal at the time, June 2005. She just had her birthday yesterday. That was the first $1 million sale that we did, which was huge, record-breaking auction. And then from there, I just got to love what I was doing. I loved the reaction of people when they would get an opportunity to be up close to items of memorabilia that represent an icon that they worship. And these people worship Marilyn Monroe, or Cher, or Barbara Streisand, or U2, or Ringo Starr, or whoever it is. And so that was tremendous.
Yeah.
And, of course, who I know very well, and who, in fact, my mother even met, Lady Gaga, in London at a fashion show back in 2013, doing a fashion show with Philip Tracy from Ahaskra, 15 miles away from me. He's the famous milliner that makes the hats for the royal family, and all of the stars, Diana Ross and Cher and Barbara Streisand, et cetera, et cetera. Incredibly nice man. But so he had a fashion show. My mum came over to London, and Lady Gaga was opened the show with Grace Jones. And so it was very nice that my mum got to meet Lady Gaga, who was really a special person, extremely talented, and a true qualified, you know, artist, musician, taking her acting very seriously now. So, and she does fantastic work for various charities. So she's a good all-rounder.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, normally we would recognize, you know, name droppers, and particularly, you know, on this program here. And, you know, when Anya Sheridan, your cousin once or twice removed, when Anya, you know, is pointing to a celebrity, you know, multi-millionaire, who still has a partner in his 92-year-old mother, who still obviously has her. Does she get a commission? I withdraw that, because if she's listening to this, maybe she's. It may not have dawned on her, you know.
Well, no, she regards herself as a silent partner, and she gets a generous hamper at Christmas, and she's very pleased about that.
Oh.
We wouldn't want her to think about any other sort of monetary rewards, you know, because she's
that'd be the height of bad manners, absolutely.
She's quite happy with a pension in Ireland, and she lives very nicely, but she follows the auctions very well. And, you know, when our auctions are taking place, you know, live auctions, as you know, sometimes in the Hard Rock Cafe in New York, or sometimes in a gallery in London, or in our gallery in Beverly Hills. But my mum on her iPad will follow along that auction. She will know the prices we're getting, and she will tell me if she's happy or not happy. And she just enjoys it so much. She always had a huge interest in Hollywood and the old movie stars. And so she loves. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to see Kim Novak up in Oregon, and I was asking my mum, "Well, who is Kim Novak?" And of course, she knows exactly who Kim Novak is. Some of these older classical artists, I may not know. And luckily for Google, but also have my mother Kitty back in Kiltoom, who I can call, and she'll certainly fill me in.
Fill you in, yeah. All right, now. Tell us about auctioneer is, a fairly broad term, and we normally associate that with, somebody who's very fast-talking, has a gavel, and rattles off, items from just wherever. Now, you want to talk about a niche auctioneering career. Yours is, because you're not interested as an auctioneer. You wouldn't have been that interested were it not for perhaps many of the stars that you met as the bellman, as the doorman, in the Hilton here in New York. So where was that bug, the bug that bit you and said, "Boy, oh my God, this is great, this is great stuff, and this is something that I can make into a career," particularly with Darren Julian, your partner, and it had to be something very spectacular. So what was the process in, first of all, identifying the clothing or other items that the stars, the biggest stars in the world, were in fact, where were they stored? How did you locate them? You're still locating loads and loads of memorabilia.
Yeah, I'm talking to you from Atlanta, Georgia, and I spent the whole morning here going through a rapper's home mansion. And he is planning to do an auction in October of this year. So it's a case of being very nosy, Adrian, but also being very respectful, but going through and looking for items that have significant value, historical value, it's pop culture history. So it was worn at the red carpet, or when he received the Grammy Award, or performance. And so that's where, the fans love. And sort of what got me hooked into this was initially, as I mentioned, 9/11, I felt, well, if I was one of the people that had perished at that terrible time, what would my life represented except, you know, a financial advisor. And I wanted more than that. And so when I joined the auction, it was like on more looking to the philanthropic side of it. Not that I'm like Mother Teresa, I am not. But where like we could raise money for charity and do some good. And so every meeting that I have with a celebrity or anybody that's planning to do an auction, I will always be prefaced by, what is your charity that you support? Where would you want a portion, or sometimes it's all of the money, to go to support? That's very rewarding on a personal level. And I know that people that come to the auction, because what we're selling, nobody actually needs. It's not anything that you need, but it's something that you want. And there's a lot of people that want stuff. But they also feel good. They're spending a lot of money. They also feel good about the fact that they know some of the money, or all of the money, depending, will go to a charity and help others in need. One of the charities we work very closely with is Music Hears, certainly when we're working with musicians, and that's a charity funded by the Grammys. So it's basically it's musicians helping other musicians. And it helps them with paying their bills. Like during COVID, so many musicians were out of work. They just couldn't pay their bills. If they broke their arm, they couldn't play guitar. You know, pay their living expenses for a few months. It's sort of a safety net that's provided by the music community. So there's a feel-good factor around that. And when I started in the business in 2005, like, what the prices then were, like, I talked about Marilyn Monroe. That auction was $1 million. We sold 230 items in June 5th, 2005. Well, there was one particular couple from the UK that bought three dresses and a whole host of makeup and stuff. They spent $80,000. So back in December, we sold those three dresses and the makeup, and they got a check for $800,000. Their total bill was $80,000 in 2005. So that will give you the sense of how the value of these items have appreciated so much. And I remember when I was resigning from Merrill Lynch, and my manager was like appalled at the suggestion that I was going to be involved with memorabilia, which was like looked down upon. And secondly, because it wasn't Sotheby's or Christie's, it was a startup. And, you know, and I look back and I think, wow, if I had 80,000 in a Merrill Lynch mutual fund, would I have 800,000 today? I don't know if I was.
Yeah. So where and how do you locate, you know, again, you mentioned music, Jimi Hendrix, for instance, which is, again, very successful auction there. U2, you know, Barbra Streisand, Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra. I mean, these are all heavy-duty classics. Do people want to bidders? Some of them, as you've pointed out there, is this an investment for some people with loads of money?
So it's like any form of collecting memorabilia. Let's say it's like if you buy art, and I always tell people, if you're buying art, you should first of all buy it because you like it. I mean, if you're going to hang it on your wall, you have to like it. If you're going to see it every day, you're going to say, wow, you love it. Or if you hate it, then you're not going to have it on your wall and then buy it. What was the point? But there are, so our client base is fans, which obviously don't have a huge amount of money, but our auctions will always include items that are affordable and within range of most people. And then obviously there is the high-end, high-priced items. But museums love to own items in our auctions because, you know, like if they own a really iconic guitar, or they own Marilyn Monroe's dress when she's saying happy birthday to JFK, or, you know, if they own Michael Jackson's red jacket from the Thriller video, people are fascinated by that, and they will keep showing up for the museum and buy tickets to come and see these items. And recently we brought in three dresses that Princess Diana, Lady Di, sold in her own auction in New York in 1997, and sadly 2 months later she passed away. Well, the lady that bought those dresses, she bought them because she just loved the fashion, she loved Princess Diana, she wanted to help Princess Diana's charities, and then suddenly Diana was gone. And so Ellen Pitto, who was the lady from Michigan who bought the dresses, said, well, these dresses are now going to mean something. And she toured them around America at schools and various places. She asked people to pay $10 if they could afford it. And all of that money she gave to children's charities and charities for people that are suffering from AIDS or need assistance. And those were two charities that was really important to Princess Diana. Sadly, Ellen passed away in January, and she said to call Julian's if anything happened to her, which, because we had sold two of her dresses back in 2013. And so we're selling three dresses now in our Hollywood auction with Turner Classic Movies. We partner with Turner Classic Movies for that, for those Hollywood auctions. That's in our gallery in Beverly Hills in September. And now I'm very proud to say that these three dresses are on display at the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge, County Kildare, Ireland. So anyone going to Ireland,
wow,
please go there. They're incredible dresses, and just great photographs of Princess Diana wearing those dresses. She sold them for charity, and now Ellen's family are selling them, and they're going to raise money again for Ellen's foundation, which is helping mature students who return to school to study art and design, because Ellen, as a mature student, after she raised her three daughters, she went back to school and got her degree in art and design, and that was her passion. So this is like, these items are, yeah, they represent, you have the beautiful image of Diana wearing these dresses at various events, but then it's what they do, and it's the stories, and it's the continuation of, you know, the giving that they can represent, and raising right. money for charities and raising awareness.
My guest friends, Martin Nolan from Kiltoom, County Roscommon, and indeed an immigrant who, by any standards, you know, has done well in America, considering, of course, that he is a partner of Darren Julian, who I believe is a native of Nebraska there. Is that right?
He's from Goshen, Indiana.
Wow.
Indiana. So, Darren, if I'm from rural Ireland, Darren is certainly from my townland. Is far looks far more urban than, let's say, where Darren is from, in corn country and Amish country in Indiana, Goshen, yeah. Auburn area of Indiana. In fact, that's where we both went to auction school as well, would you believe? Wow. Auburn, Indiana is where the auction school is around since 1921. And I'm very happy to say my brother Frank, who lives in New York, he went to auction school back in December, and I was one of his lecturers. How about that?
Give him a good grade at least.
I'm a fear grade.
that was good. Now, want to ask you about a particular area, an auction called Music Icons, 1,200 items owned and used by the world's greatest music artists, like Beatles, Guns N' Roses, even names that I can recognize, so that'll give you an idea. Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis Presley, David Bowie, the Rolling Stones, Johnny Cash. How and where are these located? Because I know that you, with your own personality, and I don't know whether any of that has to do with the Sheridan connection, but you would sell sand to the Arabs. Tell us, tell us, please, how do you locate the items to begin with? Are they, they're not in somebody's attic, right?
Correct. So an option like music icons is what we call a multi-consigner. So there's many, many people have these items. We do this auction every year at the Hard Rock Cafe in New York City every May. And so people already now, once that auction is over, they're already consigning to us for the auction next year. So if you're an Elvis collector or you're David Bowie or Guns N' Roses, right, slash whoever, they come to us. And then, so that was the Friday and Saturday in New York. And then on the Sunday, May 21st, we did over 800 items for Janet Jackson. Well, they all came from Janet Jackson herself.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
Janet is a friend, and I know Janet very well. In fact, I'm going up to see her perform in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon, on June 20th. But that was an incredible sale. But the music icons, it's all different people that have the items. Sometimes it's museums that are deaccessioning, letting go some of the items to buy other items. People, because there's sort of been a bit of a downturn in the economy, a bit of a slowing down, you know, sometimes people are needing liquidity. And so where they might not normally just want to sell their toys, as I refer them, sometimes they have to let go from time to time because they sell it, they get some money that they're in need of to pay their bills or whatever their circumstances is.
Right.
People change. And so that's the good thing about it, because if you have something, certainly something iconic, and, you know, that you really cherish and appreciate and you care for and it's in good condition and it comes back to the auction, it's very likely that you will be selling for more than what you paid for it when you initially acquired the piece. Like, and, you know, I talk about, you know, every price point, but, you know, we sold Kurt Cobain's guitar from MTV Unplugged for over $6 million. That's a world record, bought by a gentleman in Australia that's touring it around various hospitals in Australia so the children can get to see it that normally they wouldn't have that opportunity. So it's a bright spot. You know, the Thriller jacket we sold from Michael Jackson, the buyer of that was a gold commodity trader. He takes it to hospitals in Texas. Sick children, he plays the video and then he shows them the jacket and you just see their eyes light up. And that's such a feel-good factor when you see something like that. And of course, Marilyn Monroe's dress, when she's saying happy birthday to President Kennedy, we sold that for $4.81 million in 2016 to Ripley's, believe it or not. And then, of course, Kim Kardashian, who is a friend of Julian's and a client, she wore it at the Met Gala last year. It was controversial, understandably. The dress is in perfect condition, no damage, despite what people claimed and rumors. And if that dress came back to the auction now, Adrian would probably sell it for more than $10 million. That can give you an idea of the value that people place on these really iconic pieces.
Right. Okay. Now, very, very much a part of your business, and I know that the excitement must be tremendous when the when these auctions take place. But having watched a number of the items that you had, they were a little bit out of my range. You know, usually by about
me too.
usually by about a million or two, but. How and when did live auction online begin, and how much of that of that is assigned to your business, or what is the percentage of people in addition to those who obviously come in person to the auctions? How does that work?
That's a fantastic question. And Adrian, we talk about it all the time, about how technology has impacted our business, because the items we're not selling like farm animals or farm machinery or lands, let's say, that might be just right. appeal to a local audience. Our fan base, our client base is worldwide, because if you love Michael Jackson, you could live in Tokyo or Sydney, Australia,
sure.
or Kiltoom in Ireland, or Arva in County Cavan, wherever. And so the internet has helped impact our business tremendously. Now, when we did the Marilyn Monroe auction in 2005, I sort of used that as my benchmark. In fact, that was my first auction to work. We were doing it on eBay Live. It was a live auction. We had 230 lots. It took us 8 hours to sell 230 lots. And that's because we had a crowded room of bidding, but the technology was so slow. There was like a 7-second delay. So if someone was bidding online, you had to wait 7 seconds to get it to relay to the live auctioneer. Obviously now the time delay is probably 1 second or less. So it's real time. And then what also really impacted us really was COVID. Because people that were up to now reluctant to shop online or to buy online suddenly were forced. They had no other choice to order the groceries, to order whatever they were buying online because the stores were closed or you didn't want to travel to the supermarket because you were afraid, whatever. And so that really trained people how to buy online. And now I would say 70% of our sales are actually online. Even we see that people that also used to bid by phone, they now are quite happy to bid online because with live streaming video, they can see and hear the auctioneer, they can click the buttons, and they can bid against people bidding in the room or bidding on the phone. So the technology is amazing. You're just as much a part of the auction if you're in bed in Sydney, Australia, or you're in the bar in London or wherever. And so the technology has brought the auctions to the people. And obviously, the more people bidding, it impacts the price of the items that we sell. Sure. So it's been fantastic. And then, you know, people can bid online prior to the auction. And if they get outbid, they get an email or a text to say you've been outbid, do you want to bid again? And all of that technology has impacted the prices. And certainly when you're in a very sexy business like we are, which is collectibles and memorabilia, and it's celebrity related, and people are fascinated with celebrity, now, and it's a global thing, you know, all we're looking for is the two people somewhere in the world that want that item and bid against each other. And that's why, you know, the prices go through the roof, as we did last weekend in New York with the Music Icons auction. It was just phenomenal bidding, strong bidding all day.
You know, you have you have a current and keep changing your catalog. You know, to have everything up to date, you have bidders. So how do you determine on very short notice, if not at live auctions, who's who and who has the wherewithal to purchase the items?
Yes, well, that's obviously a big concern as well, because obviously we always want to protect the integrity of our auctions by making sure that the people that are bidding have the moolah to pay. You've got to pay to play. So what we actually do is we require people to register with us before the auction. And you can register during the auction. It's a process you do online. You send in a copy of your ID. You send in your credit card information. We run a dollar on the card to make sure it matches with the address and all of that. So we do sort of these internal security checks. Now, if it's a big ticket item, like let's say the 6 million Cobain guitar, we had 11 billionaires, that's with a B, bidding on that guitar. And we know that because we asked them to submit their financials to support the fact that they were bidding on something that was starting at $1 million. So if it's a big ticket item, you'll have to jump through an extra couple of hoops just to make sure that you are legitimate. Because, again, our bidder could be in Dubai or London or Paris or could be in Beverly Hills right down the road, but they're choosing to bid online rather than in the room. If they come into the room, of course, we take their ID and we run their card and we do all that. So that's so important, because there's nothing worse than having an auction where you sell and you have these great prices and then suddenly there's nothing to support it, in the sense that, the bidder wasn't real. So it's an ongoing concern and something we monitor the entire auction.
You have, so many categories. Do you, you just mentioned the music one here in New York. But what do you separate, for instance, all the categories, sports memorabilia, and the various categories, do you do those separately, or do you, in an auction, do you switch items? Are there a variety of items that you're going to be auctioning that maybe people didn't even think they might want or to purchase? How does that work?
Yeah. So let's say if I'm working with a celebrity to do an auction, let's say if we're working with Bono from U2, for instance, and if he wanted to do an auction, and he might have like great sports items and historical items and fine art and antiques and musical items. So that would be a sale that would be a sort of what we would describe as a lifestyle auction, which would be all encompassing. So you could get some really cool sports items in a single owner sale. That's how we describe them. But if it's a multi-consigner sale, like music icons, well then that's all music related. And now coming up on June 23rd, 24th and 25th, we have our big sports auction. So it's all sports. So we have one day dedicated to Pele. And Pele is somebody that I worked with, one of my favorite clients of all time. So sad that we lost him. And he was just an absolute gentleman growing up. I always wanted to kick a football and be like Pele. And then to get to meet him and work with him and do an auction for him in 2016 was just a phenomenal career highlight. And sadly now he's passed away. So we have over 300 items from him going on the auction block as part of our Sports Legends weekend. We also have fantastic items coming from Mrs. Dolores Jordan, who has founded the James R. Jordan Foundation International. And she's raising money for the Women and Children's Wellness Center Initiative in Nairobi, Kenya. So she gave us six items from her son, Michael, that we're selling, and all of the proceeds will go to benefit that center in Nairobi, Kenya, which is fantastic. So they will sell for, one of the items is a shirt worn by Michael Jordan, signed by Michael, training in France and in Spain in 1992 before the Olympics in Barcelona, when Team USA became the dream team and they won all eight games and they won the final to beat Croatia. And, the rest is history, if you will. So it's the shirt, the training shirt, and you can see the sweat stains on the shirt. And people love that because, that's the DNA. That's why they're buying it. It's the story. It's the history. It was the first time that the Olympics allowed professional players to participate in the Olympics. So, all around, it's a historical event. We estimate that, I think, somewhere in the region of 400,000, but that could sell for $1 million.
Wow. Now, you're, for the items, generally, are they on consignment or, in fact, for instance, the items for Lady Diana's dresses, do you buy those and then auction them? How is that?
Yeah, so no, all of the items come to us on consignment and we charge a commission and we enter into a contract, because as part of the auction process, we actually work for the seller. We're under contract with the seller to sell the items for the highest price that we can get. And then the buyer shows up and bids, and we ship items all over the world. So with the Princess Diana dresses, you know, they're consigned to us under contract. They knew that we were taking the dresses to Ireland. They were very, very happy about that. They knew that it was happening the week of the coronation in London for King Charles. And they were happy that, you know, there was going to be a spotlight shone on Diana, who is the mother of Charles, of William and Harry, and of course William, the future king. So there's a lot of important royal history there, and you know, so Newbridge were really delighted when we said, you know, we have three dresses, because they have, as part of their permanent collection, they have some important pieces from Princess Diana, like the dress she wore at the Taj Mahal in India, the blouse she wore when she announced her engagement to Charles. They have the revenge dress she wore when Charles was announcing to the world about Camilla and stuff like that.
So let me ask you, and I know that you are now, I'm sure that you're tapping your finger on the things, you know, on the table there, saying, you know, I wish this guy would get off, because I see somebody who may be a prospect here in the lobby. What and how do we find out more about Julian's auctions? That's a good place to be right now.
Go to juliansauctions.com, Julians with an E, I-E-N-S, and you'll see a wealth of information about auctions in the past, about upcoming auctions. You'll see press releases. You'll see all the video. We do a lot of videos, YouTube, as you mentioned, social media, Instagram, TikTok. We're doing little videos because we're finding people, it's not just enough to print it in a catalog and ship it out now to people. People want to be engaged and entertained, and they want to know more, and they want to see more of the item. Because again, we're not selling a $100 signed CD, you know, at a charity dinner. This is really now serious money that's coming into this market. So it makes our job even harder, in the sense that we have to work harder and harder to make sure the authenticity is solid. So, you know, the provenance is so important, the chain of ownership, and making sure that what we're selling is authentic, because again, when people come to the auction, you know, they're paying big money, and we want to obviously deliver the items that we're presenting and representing. And so that's a really important part of our business, and I think it's an important part of our story and our success, is the attention to detail. Because if, you know, if we're in doubt, we don't include it in the auction until we have done more research, done more photo matching, looked at more videos, talked to, if the celebrity is still living, talk to them themselves or their people. We have great relationships with all of the stars, you know, and I've become good friends with Ringo Starr, you know, I know Barbara as well, and Cher, and all of that. Because you get to work with these people on a very intimate level. We're very respectful. We never do any sort of expose or anything salacious. We're both professionals working for the common goal of, you know, bringing the items to the people, getting them an opportunity to see the items. Like sometimes we do exhibitions and we sail on the Cunard and the Queen Mary too. We go from New York to Southampton or Southampton back, and we give talks on the ship. We show videos. We bring highlights on, and people love that.
Yeah. Let me tell you, you're having a tough life there. I still think I don't know what size hamper you send to your mother, but I would say you could, you know, expand that a little bit. Martin Nolan, you are indeed, and we're very proud of your, you know, of your success and also your journey. And it is music to my ears to know that somebody who got a Donnelly visa and actually could have turned it down, came to America, and the epitome of success, again, to you and to your partner, Darren Julian. We want to wish you luck. Not too much. I mean, you're doing okay now. I don't want to jinx it. Martin, Thank you
so much. Always a pleasure. And you had me on early on in the show when I probably had no clue what I was doing. And I'm really delighted to be back on and catch up and chat with you again. It's really an honor. And I remember when you were in IBO and I was just new to Ireland and trying to figure my way out. And you had resources there that helped me and a lot of my fellow Irishmen that came over in the late 80s, early 90s. So thanks to you for all that you've done for the Irish community in general.
Thank you. Martin, again, good luck with everything that you're doing. And it is Julian's Auctions. That's juliansauctions.com is a good place
to start. Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
Thank you again, and lots of luck to you. Okay.
Thank you so much.
God bless.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com worldwide. This interview and interviews going back decades are available there, archived at irishradio.com. And friends, we're delighted to have as our guest today, Martin Nolan from Kiltoom in County Roscommon.